The U.S. Marshals have enforced the law all the way back to 1789. In that era, they also took up the census count. Their duties have changed over the years, but the Marshals have always been there to protect and serve in times of civil unrest. As Black History Month comes to a close, we take a moment to remember a few legends and a generation of law enforcement officers who had a front row seat to that civil rights movement. David Turk is historian of the Marshals Service. He tells Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson about the first African American ever to serve in the Marshals.
Frederick Douglass was appointed by President Rutherford B. Hayes in 1877. And he served throughout his term, leaving in 1881 to become the Recorder of Deeds in D.C. It was during his term that he actually bought his home, Cedar Hill, which is a restored residence run by the National Park Service today. Mm-hmm. And one of the we're going to try to have two different separate celebrations with the Frederick Douglass Family Initiatives. And the great-granddaughter of Frederick Douglass, Nettie Washington Douglass, who incidentally is also related to Booker T. Washington. So they were family at one point. But we'd like to do a wreath laying at Cedar Hill, and our Office of Equal Employment Opportunity is going to be doing a program with Miss Douglass and members of the Frederick Douglass Family Initiatives here in headquarters on March 1st.
Tell us a little bit more about what he did.
The U.S. Marshal for the District of Columbia was always an important post because unlike a lot of other presidentially appointed U.S. Marshals, and there was always one in each district, the District of D.C. had, you know, civil processions like the civilian parts of funerals, state funerals. They would have the D.C. jail, and it was considered a federal town, so there was a great deal more responsibility for that post. He and his deputies got along fantastically. He was able to motivate them. He was not afraid to compliment them. In several of his letters during his term, he definitely showed his admiration for his deputies, and they certainly showed him every amount of respect. Now, there was, because of the time, a great deal of bias and racism, mm-hmm. And which he did have to contend with, but not between him and his deputies. That was always a very important relationship to denote. When he left to go to become a Register of Deeds, he later on went into different jobs as a statesman, primarily in Haiti, in Santo Domingo specifically. He died in 1895. But his term was certainly well ahead of the curve in American society, you know, as far as combating racism, as far as inclusion. The U.S. Marshals had an early history of it, not just with African Americans, but with Hispanic Americans and with Native Americans, you know, in the 1800s. So it was certainly a landmark appointment to have. But in 1979, the Marshals went over and celebrated Douglass a first time by presenting a plaque, and they actually had the current D.C. Marshal at the time come with them and present it. And that was well publicized, but this was something that we weren't going to pass up. It was his 200th anniversary year. So it's something we enjoy doing with Miss Douglass. In honor of Black History Month, Bass Reeves should be noted. He has the only equestrian statue in Arkansas. He is an African-American Deputy U.S. Marshal that may be the model for the Lone Ranger because of his methodology of going in disguise and using a Native American boy to guard his wagon. You know, and help him at times capture him. He was an excellent tracker who lived among the Chickasaw, so he spoke fluent Chickasaw and several other languages. And he was one of the first deputies that Hanging Judge Parker picked in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and served with us for 32 years. Wow. So that was quite a career.
Now you're speaking about inclusion. The Marshals played a role in the Ruby Bridges.
Yes. Yes, Ruby Bridges is actually an honorary deputy U.S. Marshal. In 2000, then-acting Attorney General Eric Holder made her an honorary deputy U.S. Marshal at the Corcoran Gallery of Art. She was surrounded by, different photos done by Norman Rockwell, who did that famous painting that her characterization was depicted in by four headless marshals. Mm-hmm. It was called The Problem We All Live With. And it was done for Look magazine, and it was actually done several years after the actual incident that it was based on. And it's an interesting story that goes with this. In November of 1960, Ruby Bridges, then 6 years old, was escorted in by U.S. Marshals, and there was always a contingent of them. They went into the classroom in New Orleans, and it was William Franz School at the time, and there were two schools being integrated at the same time. One was a school named McDonough at a different part of New Orleans, in which three little girls were going into that particular school. So most of our personnel thought that most of any kind of escalating violence that would happen at that particular time would happen at McDonough and not at William Franz. Mm-hmm. As it turned out, the larger crowds went to William Franz, and the marshals had to have extraordinary measures. There was a barricade that went out an entire city block. We worked very closely with the city of New Orleans police, and it was a very good operation because of that. And Ruby's mother had to be convinced, and she had every faith in us, and it speaks volumes for her mother to allow that to happen. Last year, I actually met Miss Bridges down in New Orleans. And her mother is still alive, as was her teacher, Barbara Henry, who's still alive. So it was a fantastic reunion almost. And we, of course, some of the deputies who were involved. There's really only one of the famous four that you see in the photograph left, and that's Charlie Burks. He was one of our senior deputies at the time, and he was involved in just about every day that she went into that school that we were escorting her to classes. So we made sure that, even beyond the classes, it was a portal-to-portal detail, from home, into the classes, and then home again. That's what they call a portal-to-portal protective detail, today. But the interesting thing is the portrait that was done by Norman Rockwell was actually done several years after the fact, and he phoned our Boston office looking for badges. And he had a friend who was also an artist who happened to be our U.S. Marshal at the time, Robert Morey. And Morey said, well, they're accountable property, so you have to have the deputies attached to the badges. So they had to go out to the studio in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and they were actually his models because Rockwell painted from life. He did not paint from pictures. And there was a local girl, I believe she lives in Lynchburg today, but she was a doctor's daughter who portrayed Ruby in that picture. And they just made up the studio with the headless. So the headless marshals that you see were actually really, really his models. They were real deputies. And so it was a little bit of a different situation, mainly because Morey and Rockwell were friends. And so it was a fascinating piece of history that a lot of people don't know about.
Now, you also played an important role in the 68 riots here in D.C. After Dr. King was killed. Talk a little bit about that.
There's a little caveat to that. In a way, we had met Dr. King several times during our history during the 60s. One time we were deployed right after the Freedom Riders and had been down in Montgomery, Alabama, and he was going to be talking. And it was kind of a very rushed schedule. And we didn't know about it. And as soon as the Department of Justice found out, they sent the marshals down there to protect Dr. King. And I think he thought we were the FBI because we actually had to follow his car. I think he probably didn't realize it was the U.S. Marshals who were, doing the shadowing that day. And it was a good thing we did because there was riots going on. Mm-hmm. And they did spike up as he was in the First Baptist Church there. And that was in 61. But in 68, a sad duty that we had to do, and it was our last interaction with him, was we had to serve him with a restraining order a day before he was to participate in the sanitary workers' strike in Memphis. And, you know, there was a picture taken, the U.S. Marshal at that time, Cato Ellis, kind of felt out of place. And, of course, there's a picture of him being very surprised. I mean, you know, and King and his friends were laughing at him because they had planned the whole thing, apparently, because they were expecting the marshals to deliver this, you know, this restraining order for a day or two while they got their permits together. And it was during that time that they were waiting that Dr. King was killed. And so it was kind of a sad occasion, you know, for us as well. But right after his death, the D.C. riots, among like other cities, rose up, and there was incredible amounts of reaction. And at that time, the D.C. Marshal was a gentleman who later became a judge, Luke Moore. And there's a school named after him, but Luke Moore was the U.S. Marshal from 62 to 68. And he was there during that time, and he deployed all the marshals around there to assist with, you know, trying to spare as many federal buildings, as many city buildings as he could. And it was a challenge, and it was a dangerous duty. There were several deputies who have spoken about it in interviews, you know, in oral histories. The University of Mississippi was probably our biggest flashpoint during the Civil Rights era. That was 1962. September 30th, October 1st was the date of the riots. Mm-hmm. And we were enrolling Mr. James Meredith, who was a transfer student from Jackson State University. And he, you know, went to the courts. He, you know, went to the federal courts. They decided in his favor. And we were to escort him onto the campus, and there was massive resistance from the state. Particularly from the governor at the time, Governor Barnett. And we tried several times to get him registered, and without success, so we knew it would take a full-scale operation to do this. And we probably had about 500 special deputies, which we deputized Border Patrol and prison guards, and our own personnel surrounded the registration building on a Sunday while a lot of people were at a football game in Jackson, and had to wait until the next morning. Well, the crowds grew after dark as word got around that the marshals were there, and it blown up into full-scale riots. Now, we did get Mr. Meredith on campus and guarded in a dorm room, so he was not in the registration building at the time of the riots. But after dark, they found some bricks by a science building. They started pelting us with it, and that kind of graduated to battery acid, which caused a great deal of burns on our personnel. And finally, buckshot. People started shooting at us. There was a couple snipers. One of our personnel was gravely injured and almost died. Came very, very close. Luckily, there was a Border Patrolman who knew a lot about medical, had good medical training, and was able to do a tourniquet, you know, and was able to save his life. But he walked around with that bullet in him for the rest of his life.
We obviously can't cover every story you have to tell, everything that the marshals have done over the years, but I understand you've written a book. Tell us a little bit about it and where people can find it.
The University of North Texas Press published My Modern History. On it covers primarily our years from 1940s on to the present, but with a focus, and you know, from the 60s to about 2002, and it's about 500 pages complete with illustrations, and that took me about 13 years to put it together because there's a lot of official material there, but a lot of things a lot of people haven't seen before, you know, a lot of the events we talked about today plus, you know, some others, but it's available through the publisher or, you know, on the internet. It was put out last year. It's called Forging the Star, so it's got a very attractive blue cover with our seal on it, so it's distinctive.
David Turk is historian of the U.S. Marshals Service. Find the full interview and a link to more about his book at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.